Blog Talk Radio.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
Took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. By some, he's been called controversial.
How can I convince you when your ears refuse to hear? You turn your heart away from me each time when I draw near. Your eyes refuse. Mind they glance away in fear, as if you should not know that your reception is sincere.
Now, keep in mind that some of my guests have been approached by Homeland Security or FBI saying, why are you going on the Clay Douglas show?
My message to those guys, if they're listening this morning, is go get a cup of coffee, maybe you'll learn something.
We both took the same oath. You know, to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't recall there being an expiration date on that.
Well, it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain? Knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies.
He is the free American, Clay Douglas. Catch the Free American weekdays at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern.
Every time I think about the damage that's been done, the anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome. I want to tear the moon out of the sky and rub the sun. Why do
For the podcast and more details, visit www.freeamerican.com or catch the podcast by phone by calling 832-999-8621.
All right. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Free American. I'm your host. I am Clay Douglas. My guest today is Jim Porter. And welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
All right. Your sound is good there. I can hear you. And I kind of want to open up. We're going to be talking about titles of nobility. We're going to be talking about the 13th Amendment. We're also going to be talking about insurance fraud, a few other things. But I have said, and I don't know this for a fact, that I believe that the office of the Bar Association, that the lawyers that belong to the Bar Association are really criminals. They and their office is probably right over there in the city of London, probably right next door to the Bank of England or the Rothschilds Bank. And who's the worst here? The bankers or the lawyers? I think it's six of one, half a dozen of another. And these banking oligarchs, Nelson Hultberg, sent me an article. He said, can anyone stop the overweening lunacy of the banking oligarchs? No more than anyone can stop pythons from devouring rabbits at play. Our bankers are not honorable. They are not foresighted. They've set in motion forces that no human effort can avert. Moreover, they long ago formed a deadly co-op with history's most deplorable criminal element, the state, This has given them a free pass to indulge in ugly assets, corpulence, and hideous irresponsibility. It has hidden the true state of their criminality from realization by good men and women. The banking oligarchs and the power they have over us today are the result of a long train of poisonous ideas descending upon the American public over the past 120 years. It began with the coming of socialism to Europe and its Fabian migration to America at the turn of the century. Capitalism, the Fabians preached, is the root of all evil, with its insistence and gold as money. Its freedom is no longer possible in the modern world. It brings mankind to uncontrollable booms and busts and horrific poverty. There is no cure for capitalism. It must be burned at the stake of its gregarious altar. Free banking. Free banking is responsible for wild cycles, and gold stifles productivity when needed. That may be going over in left or right field there, but the bankers are our problem, since we have allowed them to issue our money and so they could charge us interest on it. And the people that work for them are the lawyers, who have accepted a title of nobility that are Constitution bars, and sometime within the last 100 or 150 years, they even passed the 13th Amendment, the real 13th Amendment, which bars titles of nobility. Am I accurate on this? Take over for me, Jim. And while you're at it, tell people who you are and what you've been doing here.
Okay. First of all, I am Jim Porter. I actually live in the southwest part of Colorado, Ridgeway. In fact, meeting Clay, he actually lives about 40 miles from where I was raised. I had to move to Colorado to meet somebody in Georgia to introduce me to somebody in California who introduced me back to Clay to be on your show. Clay asked me to be on here to talk about what I found in regards to what we call the original 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution. And to get to the 13th Amendment, I think it's important for people to have a little knowledge on where this is at in the Constitution and how it all came to be. The founders of the original Constitution put a set of rules in play. The Constitution is a contract where the people allow the federal government to do certain things in representing the people. In the Constitution, we start off with Article 1, which is actually the rule book for the Congress of the United States government. And going to this titles of nobility, we actually find in Article 1, Section 9, and each paragraph or statement in a section is known as a clause. In Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, the founders actually wanted to take care of the issue of titles of nobility with regards to the people of this country. And they had to do that in basically two statements. What they did is they set up the federal government, what we call Washington, D.C., the 10 square miles that everybody's familiar with. They had to address that area on the face of the earth. Then they made the second statement to take care of all other areas, not only known at the time this document was drafted and ratified, but any other country that would ever come into being in the future. So in the first statement of Clause 8, they simply stated, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, period. When you look in Black's Law, you will find out if you read the definition of a foreign power, everything outside of that 10 square miles is considered a foreign power to our federal government. That includes England, France, Brazil, China, and every state, not only known the day this was written and ratified, but today, all of the states that have been added. They are known as foreign powers to the federal government. So the first statement took care of 10 square miles. The second statement in Clause 8 takes care of the rest of the world. And that says no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present, emolument, office, or title from any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. I've talked to people about this, and they say, well, that's great. It handles the 10 square miles known as Washington, D.C. What about the states? It doesn't handle the states. The framers of our Constitution actually thought about that. So if you move down to Section 10, it goes on to say, no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, or grant any title of nobility. That right there are the three statements that prohibit any domestic government employee from accepting any office of profit of any kind from any king, prince, or foreign state. Our original Constitution didn't have a penalty for people that violated the Constitution. Years later, actually, they tried to do it in the early 1800s. If I recall, it was 1803. That one failed, but in 1809, the president actually sent a request to the United States Congress to address this title of nobility violation. Ultimately, in 1812, it led to the ratification of what we call the original 13th Amendment. And I have a lot of documents that prove it actually was ratified and it was placed into the Constitution. The benefit of this original 13th Amendment that has basically been set aside by the attorneys, the bar members, was that it provided the penalty for violating the Constitution, and that penalty was they ceased to be citizens of the United States. That could cause them to, hey, if they wanted to come to this country, they'd have to register with the United States Department of State. They're a foreign citizen. I don't know, depends on where they took their appointment from, their office of profit. If it's from Germany, England, anywhere else, and we know it's prohibited from being issued in the United States, that's where they basically have their citizenship. This is what caused the fear of the attorney group. In fact, lawyers are, everybody's, all these people are lawyers. Some of them choose to join the Bar Association and accept the title of Esquire. And if you look in the, you can go to Wikipedia and you can read about these under the, I can't think of the term, order of precedence. You will clearly see that to the title of Esquire is a British title of nobility. Now, to the 13th Amendment, when this all started, it was sent to the Congress in 1809. By 1810, both branches of our U.S. Congress had approved it, and they sent it out for ratification. When it happened, there were 17 states that made up the United States, which required a three-quarters vote majority ratification of the people, and that led to the number 13 as the number of states that had to ratify this thing. And I've entered in recently, well, in the last few years, I've talked to attorneys, and they say, well, it wasn't properly ratified. There was only 12 states ratified it. You needed 13. It never existed. Their argument is that this amendment was mistakenly placed in the United States Constitution, and then somewhere after 18 just decided to take it out. Well, that is not true. and I've got the documents to prove it. I'm able to share a screen with Clay, and I can do some of this, but what I'd like to do is back up a minute and help the people listening to this understand some of these terms that we find in the original Constitution. In this Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, when the framers of our Constitution wrote this, they made a statement, and to deal with the states, no person holding any office of profit. That's a very, very key point in our Constitution that I wanted to present to the people. A lot of people haven't researched. They're busy in their own lives. They're doing their own thing. And so if you go into a search tab, very simply, and type in office of profit, you can look at the Wikipedia page. Office of profit is a term used in a number of national constitutions to refer to an executive appointment. This is the tie to a foreign power, as it's prohibited to have, you know, from these being issued in our country at the federal or the state level. Anybody that has an office of profit known as an executive appointment has received this from a foreign power. So we've got the definition placing this office of profit granted by a foreign power from our original Constitution now into play. When we continue to read on our original Constitution, it says, a person holding any office of profit shall, without the consent of Congress, and I'm going to stop right there at the comma. There's a key in this thing about without the consent of Congress. If you would, you can open up another tab and type in Title of Nobility Clause, and you can read that this goes right back to the article, section, and clause that I'm talking about. And when you scroll down to the bottom of this text, of this page, they actually discuss constitutional authorization. We know it exists. We know that Congress abides by the Constitution that's in play today. Because, and an example that they list is in 1942 when World War II broke out, they actually authorized armed forces, members of the armed forces, to accept decorations, orders, medals, emblems, these titles of nobility from foreign governments. In fact, when they wrote that, they allowed it to happen throughout the duration of World War II, and up to 1 year following its conclusion. They give some notable examples, and one of them is General Dwight D. Eisenhower. He accepted a number of these titles, but he did it with the permission of the United States Congress. Puts this title of nobility issue into play. When you go on and read a little bit more in this, Congress has also consented in advance to the receipt from foreign governments of these gifts, these titles of nobility, through the Foreign Gifts and Decorations Act. It's Act 5 U.S.C. 7342, and also the Fulbright-Hays Act of 1961. We know Congress allows some people to accept titles of nobility, but the one thing they don't do is they don't allow lawyers to accept these to become bar members and then work in our domestic government positions. And that's the rub that everybody's looking for a solution.
Let me, for just a moment here. The problem as I see it is that Congress can grant, you know, some exception to this, but all of the members of Congress, with the exception of Dr. Ron Paul, are lawyers. So isn't this a case of the Wolf watching the hen house?
Exactly. This is the reason they don't want the people to know about it. These could lead to the exposure of treasonous acts. Our Constitution started out to prohibit the foreign influence in within any of our government, our domestic government positions. Yet we have attorneys who are bar members who have accepted a title of nobility from a foreign power currently employed within our domestic government bodies. That's why they don't want to talk about it. That's why they deny it ever happened. In fact, that's why the current attorneys say, well, no, it was just mistakenly added to the Constitution. We just took it out. Take it out because they don't want the people to use it. This is where the education of the people is going to be very, very important so that they not only understand what the truth is, they know where the evidence is to back it up. When they make a claim, they want to be able to have the evidence. Everybody, I think, has been looking for this for a long time to some level. I got off on this tax, and this is not a part of the conversation, really, but I had a property taken by my local government. Through years and years and years of trying to press this through the courts, every time I received a derogatory decision, it was always from an attorney. In the state of Colorado, your district attorney has to be, for them to be qualified to hold the office, they're required to be a bar member in good standing for no less than 3 years. Bar members. Our judges at the state level, and we have 22 districts, I don't know, we might have a couple hundred state judges. Those people are required to be bar members in good standing for no less than 5 years. Goes back to the bar. In my case, what happened is I had non-bar members taking private property and then relying on the assistance of bar members to keep it covered up. When I exhausted all of my funds, I exhausted every opportunity, even through the Court of Appeals, to try to make it into, I never made it to court, but in my attempt to make it to court to prove these criminal acts, I kept running into these bar members that were throwing the roadblock. That's where I got off on how do these, what are these people, what is it that they're trying to hide, and why can't I get rid of them? Why can't I get them out of the way? I can deal with people in my community. I have a very good reputation with the ordinary people, yet I have attorneys making derogatory remarks, and so I look for the evidence to prove that they're wrong, and it goes back to this Titles of Nobility Amendment that refers to the this part of the Constitution that prohibits titles of nobility. I hope that made sense.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So getting to the actual original 13th Amendment and what happens throughout a 60 to 80 year history of our country when this was in, I wanted to talk to the people about the 13th Amendment. Earlier I stated that this thing was ratified in 1812. We had 13 states. The people of 13 states decided that this was important enough to add to the Constitution. Well, what we've been dealing with is trying to find the proof that it existed, that it wasn't just a mistake. And I'm going to tell you something. They don't make mistakes with the United States Constitution. It's never happened. We just need to prove it. I'm just proving the attorney's statements. And what I started stumbling on was evidence of the actual existence that this thing was put into the Constitution legally. One of the things people don't know, a lot of people that I've talked to don't know, that from 1812 to 1890, as our country was growing and adding territories that ultimately became states that we know today, Colorado's one of them, Wyoming is the last one that we found these documents in, but it was California. Everything after Louisiana, which was admitted into this, it was granted statehood on April 30th of 1812. Everything between Louisiana and Wyoming, that was all these territories that were added to the United States, all generated a congressional approval and a congressional recognition that the 13th Amendment was part of the United States Constitution. And that, I'm not going off subject, but it's a slightly different subject that ties back into confirming that the 13th Amendment actually exists, the original 13th Amendment, known as the Titles of Nobility Act. And to explain that, and I've actually got a document as of last December from the state of Colorado that this is actually the truth, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the process for an area to become a territory of the United States has many facets. The first one is it needs to be surveyed. What is it? How big is it? What are the boundaries? In fact, in Colorado, the United States government took about half of Kansas that was known in 1859. They cut Kansas in half, moved it over to Colorado so that the people of the new territory of Colorado would have farming and a way to support themselves in the winter. Around here in the mountains, we've got snow half the year. So,
if you'll excuse me, this is a pet peeve of mine. I don't believe that Texas should have ever given up our mountains,
I deal with people in Texas, and I understand exactly why you say it. I was raised in Texas, and I've studied Texas history. And that might be a subject that comes up like second or third or fourth issue down the line. What I'm trying to do is help the people get control of the country today, and then later we can fix all the mistakes. There can be public debate, and we can address things as the subject of Texas, because actually where I live was part of Texas in 35 when the statehood thing happened.
I'm not sure the date. What about 1835,
I think, is when they gained national sovereignty. I think it was later. I can't remember. But anyway, back to this, the confirmation of the 13th Amendment is where I was going with this. When just prior to the Civil War, the Union needed our metallic resources. They needed the gold and the silver and the lead and all this other mess. And they wanted the area that became Colorado to be a part of the United States. Well, back in the day, and it's still this way today as far as I've been able to determine, it took 60,000 people to band together, identify a boundary, and then surrender a petition, an application to the federal, including everything they knew about the United States and anything that they wanted to do beyond the Constitution to govern themselves. They put this in a package, and they sent it to the federal government. These documents were reviewed. They were determined to be factual and correct. Then the United States Congress would vote. Both houses would vote. When that was approved and it was deemed to be constitutional through the Supreme Court, it went to the president for signature. It's the same process that we go through today. Well, we're supposed to. It doesn't always happen. So, one of the things that happened when the area to be known as Colorado sent in their petition, they had to include what they thought was a correct and current edition copy of the state's constitution. And when they did that, they submitted their copy, which included this title of nobility amendment, what we call the original 13th.
Right.
That was deemed to be correct by the United States Congress, and in 1861, Colorado was admitted as a territory to the United States. So we know that, as in fact, Wyoming did this later on in 1890, and it was still the fact. It's in the Wyoming documents. It's in their original territorial and statehood documents, that not only did the Constitution for them include the 13th Amendment, it actually had the 14th Amendment and other ones listed beyond it. Now, the reason Colorado is becoming important, and I've got an original 1868 law book to prove this. I've shown it on the screen to Clay. Listeners, somehow we might be able to get this to them later. What happened? 1861, the attorneys actually, this is just my thought, they got Lincoln a vote. They voted him into the presidency. He used the race card to split the country, which ultimately split the Congress, which created the Civil War. And it's my opinion, all of this was done so eventually they could get another amendment to the United States Constitution. For the people that are making a small timeline here, we know from 1812 to 1861, there was no additional amendments added to the Constitution. The Constitution ended with the Titles of Nobility Amendment. And again, that added the penalty to the original Constitution of loss of United States citizenship. It says cease to be a citizen of the United States. That's it. For 40-something years, these attorneys lived in fear. They did, but back in the day, the communications aren't what we have today. First of all, men were voting, women were set aside. Nobody paid attention to the kids, and the men were out farming and doing whatever they did, working 10, 12, 18 hours a day to support their family. Nobody's really paying attention to this. And the attorneys got it. Rocked along for years and years and years and years. The Civil War starts. In fact, Lincoln, I think it was March 4th, he was inaugurated. By March 27th, there was enough division of the people of this country that when the South Carolina seceded on March 27th, that actually split the Congress. It took away their ability to have a quorum, to have enough members. They fought the Civil War. In February of 1865, Lincoln signed a document that was sent to the Congress to add another amendment to the Constitution known as the Slavery Amendment. Now, and we know where this document's at. Several of us do. In that document, and I don't think he actually drafted it. I think he had an attorney aide, a legal somewhere under him, actually write this document for his review and signature. There was a one-digit mistake in that document when he requested this amendment. He asked for it to be the 13th Amendment. Now, we'll never know. It could have been an inadvertent mistake, or it could have been an intentional mistake. But they put a 3 instead of a 4. They asked for 13 instead of 14. This thing was submitted in February of 1865 to the U.S. Congress. They approved it. They sent this out, just like they did the Titles of Nobility Amendment, to the people. They got it ratified. By December of 1865, the Slavery Amendment was added to the United States Constitution. The key to this whole discussion that I'm going through is that between February of 1865 and December of 1865, that one-digit mistake was found and corrected. They didn't. It was requested as the 13th, but it actually came into being as the 14th Amendment. I tell people this, well, how do you prove it? Well, my proof is I own a Colorado law book. This book was authorized by the Territorial Secretary of State. It was deemed to be correct, and it was actually provided to all of the counties in Colorado. And the book that I have has the pedigree stamp marks of previous ownership from my county's Montrose County Law Library. This was the book that was used for 130-something years to direct the people and provide their laws. In that book, now if you in eight, you got a, there's a 3-year period here. We know in 1861, 10 amendments. We know in 1865, another one was added to the 14. In 1868, my book shows the title of nobility in place in the United States Constitution in the slavery amendment titled numbered 14 following it. These are documents. We know it existed. In fact, in that case actually goes into Wyoming in 1890. Knowing that it was ratified has been taken care of. Proving it existed for decades has been taken care of. And in my debates with it all over this country, I have thrown best evidence at them, told them, well, I can prove it was there. You have to prove that there was a repeal movement to remove it from the Constitution, and that's what they can't do. This 13th Amendment is there. Our Constitution, from that point on, needs to, all the numbers need to be changed. Whether you agree with any amendments after the slavery amendment, that's an individual debate. I'm not going to get into that. But if the people can prove that the original titles of nobility amendment was done correctly and put in place, it changes all of our from 1812. Everything has to be rewritten. And it proves treason. It proves that our government has been loaded with foreign influence for whatever this is now, almost 200 years. And that's what the attorneys fear. That's why the people, first of all, they work through our school boards, through our state education boards. Don't put that in the history books. Don't teach our young people what the truth and the history is of this country.
I call it the Public fool system.
Yeah, I have a lot of people come up with a lot of different terms for this. I try to stay away from some of that and just go with the facts. My effort in this, if I could actually ever get an attorney pinned down on a witness stand, I think I could handle him. But also, if I can't do it, maybe somebody else can. And if I can provide them with some information to help them substantiate this claim, it would actually change the way business is done in this country at our government level. It could lead to, monetary, system changes. There's a debate that I don't know how big really is. But what I'm trying to do is find a way to take what we have, what the American people want to uphold, what they believe to be the truth, expose all of the small facets of it, and then let them use it.
Do you have any organization dedicated to that?
Well, I've talked to thousands of people, and I've got it whittled down to a few dozen. A lot of people, they don't want to ruffle the feathers of the government and affect their personal nest. They believe in it. They wish somebody would do something about it. But they don't get involved.
I'm sorry, you
broke up a little bit.
Yeah, I said... The response is, I just don't want to call attention to myself. I just want to stay below the radar. That's what I get along.
Well, yeah, and that's going to lead to maybe a little bit of my personal movement, which I think the people can know about this. It has nothing to really the value of the property taking that I suffered. But what I've decided to do is try to make my attack at the local level in my state. And you mentioned earlier in the lead up to the show about insurance fraud.
Yeah, sure.
Insurance fraud is actually what this is all about. What the crimes that the current people are committing today actually include insurance fraud. And this one small, it's non-sexy, but it has teeth. If we could expose this to the current people in our government, you know, if we could expose this crime being committed by the people currently in our government, this could be the hook to use our current state statutes, their playbook against them to get them removed from these their positions of power. Whether it's your
insurance fraud. Tomorrow I will have Carl Swenson on, and he's been going into county and city meetings.
Yeah, Carl's a very good friend of mine, and he and I have been working at this quite a long time, doing research back and forth. You know, he helps me, I help him. I find something in Georgia, he finds something. Yeah, he and I have worked at this quite a long time. First of all, I've only researched 17 or 18 states. Carl's done some, I've done some. One of the things that we found in the state statutes is our elected officials, most of them, not all of them, but a high percentage, 90% of or more, they're required to have a fidelity bond to protect the people against any of their fraudulent decisions, so that if they hurt a citizen, one or all, there is there's a place where they can file a claim for relief as an injured person. In my county, the sheriff's supposed to have it. Clerk of courts the county recorder's supposed to have it. The treasurer's supposed to have it. The county commissioner's supposed to have it. Well, one of the things is these people can't get it. They have committed so many crimes that when they apply to a securities and exchange recognized insurance company, you know, the SEC regulates insurance, they can't get insurance. These insurance companies do not want to insure known criminals. It's no different than somebody driving and having enough wrecks that finally they can't buy insurance anymore. Technically, they're supposed to quit driving. Most don't, but that's the way the law is set up. This is the violation that we could actually prove in Colorado against 95 or more percent of our elected government employees. Yet we have no access through law enforcement to bring these people to court. Law enforcement's involved in it. It's a very, very, very big tangled web. But when we research it, Carl and I, it always leads back to the State Bar Association. The attorneys in the bar are controlling all of the government employees. They're telling them what to do and when to do it and actually who to talk to and who to leave alone. I'm one of those people that they do not want to talk to. In my county, what I discovered is somewhere around 2008 is when this problem started to show up for my elected government employees, the county commissioners and sheriff and whatnot. These guys had been breaking the law, and they started creating enough problems for their insurance company that they couldn't buy an individual fidelity or surety bond, which is in our statutes, Title 30 in Colorado, that they're required to have this to be qualified to hold their position. And that brings up another little side subject. There's a difference in being legally elected versus being legally qualified to hold the position.
Okay.
A known criminal can turn out a petition, and if enough people sign it, he can be placed on a local ballot for whatever position he wants to run for. If enough people aren't paying attention to who he is or what his background is, they could actually elect him. Charles Manson in California could be one of these. They just convicted and sentenced this guy in Denver, that movie theater shooter a lot of people are familiar with.
Yeah.
Once that guy's a resident in one of those jails long enough, he becomes a resident of a precinct somewhere. Now, the people could elect somebody like that, And this is actually part of the saving grace to the American people is our election system, because we elect them early in November, but we don't inaugurate them until January sometime. That is the vetting period where they have to turn in an application for a fidelity bond so that now they can become qualified to accept the position that they were elected to. What happened back in around 2008, the people that we had elected couldn't buy individual fidelity bonds. Now, dear oh me, oh my, I don't want to give up my position. So what these people did, and I've got the documents on my county commissioners and others, and the sheriff, others in my community, what they did is they decided to join my county's crime insurance policy, which insured all of the county employees. Well, that went along for a couple or 3 years. I'm not exactly sure when it started, but I do know by the end of 2010, that insurance company figured out that they were still insuring criminals, not individually, but in a group policy. So they stopped selling the policy to the county. Now these criminals go, oh dear, oh me, oh my, now what do we do? Well, this was such a widespread and rampant problem throughout the state. The Bar Association actually wrote new code, what became our statutes and codes. They sent this to our legislative assembly, which approved it, I think, in April of 2010, so that by 2011, what happened is all of the county commissioners approved this new plan for what they call certificates of participation. And your listeners, if you know you're on a computer, open up a new tab, type in certificate of participation and read more about it. It's a financial document. Basically, it was set up for governments so that in bonding referendums issues, where they're going to build a new public pool or a government building or an airport, this was a financial document. So when people bought into these bonds, it assigned their
certificate.
It's a certificate of participation. What this did is it assigned their portion of ownership in this bonding project. Well, what they did is they decided to self-insure themselves. See, they couldn't leave the budgeted money like in a county treasury.
Right.
In 2011, in 2010, they set up the 2011 budget, and it said they're going to spend so much money on bonds. Well, they didn't have an insurance company to accept payment of the money. They couldn't get a policy. So they send this money to the bond. They send it actually to the Supreme Court, who is owned by Florida Supreme Court, is owned by the Colorado Bar. And I've got the financial documents to substantiate that. And we're finding it in other states, and that's what Carl's going to talk to you about. Now they basically are self-insuring themselves. So what I did is I investigated these, and they're basically risk management companies. I investigated these outfits through the Securities and Exchange Commission, and every result came back. No records found. These people are not insurance companies. What they basically set up is holding companies where the county treasuries can be sent somewhere to get rid of the money so the locals don't see it still there. Somewhere else, basically the illusion of insurance, but yet I can't get a certificate of liability coverage for an insurance provider of any kind on any one of my elected local officials. I have no insurance protecting me from the criminals elected to this government.
In my mind here, in the back of my mind here, I'm seeing something called a comprehensive annual financial report that we don't see very much. We're not getting a very good accounting on where our money's going. Who's handling that? Does that have anything, any bearing on this?
Yes, it does, Clay, because I've got those documents. I've actually got the 2014 Colorado CAFR that discusses certificates of participation and the judiciary's branch, the judiciary branch of this government's involvement. That's how I know the money's going to the judicial branch, which is the Bar Association that owns the Supreme Court. It's a 220-something page document that I can't get people to read. So what I do is I get on Skype and I screen share with them, and I've been showing people where this is all at. Our government's actually telling the truth. People aren't reading the truth. They're busy doing their own little thing, and they're not paying attention to what the government's really all about.
Another thing that's kind of my pet peeve here, and that's our prison industrial complex. I mean, because I've been kind of railroaded into this when I got caught with marijuana in Texas 45 years ago. You know, if you go before a jury, you could get 99 years. But, hey, we can get you 7. We can get you 7. We can make you a deal. And today we've got more people in prison than communist China.
Well,
here we go with the lawyers again, right?
Well, see, that's the thing. A good attorney doesn't solve a problem if he doesn't create two more. Called job security. But also, you know, they'd rather negotiate and keep you out of an official court thing, get you to admit, yeah, I screwed up and I'm willing to take this whatever penalty, whether it's a fine or jail time or a combination of both. But if the people actually knew what was going on, they'd say they would, when they end up in front of one of these non-qualified courts. You know, like I was telling you about the judges, and I didn't get this far. My sheriff's not qualified because he doesn't have a bond. My county commissioners, my clerk of recorder. I've even taken this to the district attorney level. We have 22 judicial districts in the state of Colorado. None of those guys are qualified to hold their position because none of them have a bona fide insurance policy, a fidelity bond to protect the people against their actions. I've even taken it to another level. None of the judges in all of these district courts have a bond. Now, under their rules, these courts have to be administered by properly qualified judges. If somebody went into one court, and I don't care if it's a speeding ticket or you got caught with some weed that you weren't supposed to have, I don't care what it is. Instead of answering their complaint, if you do coverage that properly qualifies him to sit behind the bench, that proceeding would come to a grinding halt. It would never get started. This is my tack to help the people understand how to use these attorneys' rule book to beat the attorney. The district attorney is actually the Achilles heel in all of the states that I've investigated. Again, I haven't done them all. I don't have that much time. Carl and I work, I was telling you about Georgia and Colorado. He's found it rampant over in Georgia. If anybody was hauled to a court, you look at the prosecuting attorney, and you demand a certificate of liability coverage. You don't care if it comes from the bar. You don't care if it comes from the Supreme Court or if it comes from State Farm Insurance. They have to provide it to be properly qualified to hold the domestic government position that they say they're qualified to hold. Now, once you get proof of insurance, and this is the fallacy, this is where the people are dropping the ball. If he doesn't have it, we should have, like in Colorado, it's called the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, state law enforcement. We should be able to go to our sheriff, who recommends our case be investigated by the state, and that bureau, that division, should go and arrest that district attorney. Put him in holding, which then requires documents to be filed with a clerk of court in that jurisdiction. That clerk of court assigns a judge. When that judge is named, then you request the liability coverage on that individual. And if they don't have it, when you walk into the arraignment hearing as a complaining party, the one bringing the charges, you can arrest the judge too. Now you got two people in jail. These people will rot in jail until the system corrects itself. The problem for the state now becomes is there any other judge that wants to be treated like the... They're going to go on permanent vacation. They're going to take whatever the spoils of war that they've already got, and they're going to disappear. This is a system that I've tried to perfect so that the people can use the current rule book to displace the current corruption. And once we get virtuous people that are bondable, that we can identify, then we can change the system. If you want to change the Constitution, fine. You want to change a state statute, fine. You want to take something out, put it in, I don't care what it is. But to keep the horse ahead of the cart, I'm trying to get the people to understand there is a mechanism. Carl knows it. Key Borders knows it. I'm talking to people all over the country, but we're too dispersed. We're not in the right jurisdictions. You know, having 100 people across a 3,000-mile area isn't enough density to affect a change anywhere. That's what these radio shows are about. This is to help the people understand, to help them research their area, to understand not only who the problem is, why they're the problem, and how to use the system to correct it.
Let me ask you this. Somebody is for speeding, for spot, or whatever. Could you or we go to the bondsman and get him out and take him to court instead of the lawyer? Could he pay us instead of the lawyer to provide him with the documentation to defend himself? You know, one of the problems that I have here is they tried to kill every business that I've had, every publishing company I had, every magazine that I put out. You know, they went to their advertisers. Oh, your advertiser was Clay Douglas. Well, so they managed to shut me down, and we're talking about well-financed ADL, Southern Poverty Law, calling me a radical, calling me a racist, calling me whatever they want to call me, none of which is true, you know. And how could we turn this? How could we turn this to the benefit of the people instead of paying a lawyer to do this? How about we just... interview your lawyer and put him in jail instead of you. How about that?
Well, you know, that is a mouthful to address. You know, I've tried to keep it simple, stupid, the KISS thing.
Yep.
You know, really, there's a vertical integration of this insurance fraud from the smallest government body to the governor's mansion in any state. And what you got to do is find out, identify the best target. You know, where are you going to place the first shot? And I've determined that these district attorneys are the Achilles heel of the system. The reason they're at the Achilles heel is these people operate in a godlike fashion. Through prosecutorial discretion. If they don't want to prosecute a criminal, they just don't bring charges. Now, you as an individual, they will hammer. If I do anything wrong, they're going to come after me with the full weight and force of every government body that they can organize. Yet, when you prove fraud against one of the people in their organization, they refuse to prosecute. So, there becomes a problem of where do you attack this elephant? Well, you know, messing with too low at your police or your sheriff level, anybody that you bring to bear, in my state, you have to deal with a district attorney, and if they refuse to prosecute, you're SOL. You go to the governor, you go to an executive director of one of the major state departments, that person receives this prosecutorial discretion and is never brought to court. So depending on your state situation, and this is what the people are going to have to come together in smaller groups to discuss this, debate it, and organize a plan of attack, I suggest you look at the district attorneys. See, I had to set my personal problem with the government aside, and I'm asking people with speeding tickets or whatever, you got to set that aside. You got to deal with what the true problem is to remove it, and that's these district attorneys. Now, just to speak about your comment about a speeding ticket,
right?
I actually have a friend of mine in Denver who, he was sitting at a red light, and a guy came up and sideswiped his car. The cops took the other guy's story, la-da-da-da. They were hauling my buddy to court. Well, when he found out about this bonding thing and he started requesting the right documents, son of a gun, the judge dropped the charges. They did not want him in a public venue putting this in in their records. So there are ways for people that know enough about this to use it to defend themselves and their personal claims. We need people without personal claims to be able to come on board and focus on the true problem in our states, and that is the district attorneys in the judicial branch of government.
Yeah, when you say that, though, I got to tell you, I can hear a dead guy kind of behind my ear, George Carlin. It's a big club and you ain't in it.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, it's fun to laugh about things, but I'll tell you what, he's gone and we're still here and we're the ones that have to deal with the problems left.
I do know of somebody that's dealt with governors, that's dealt with sheriffs, and I didn't go to jail because I started the militia. People came after me in New Mexico. I said, I started in the governor's office. What's your problem? What part of the Second Amendment don't you understand? And I'd almost look forward to taking on the district attorney if I had a few people behind me. You know, I came up with a concept here, Jim, called Liberty Villages. Because I asked myself, how do we make it 100 years ago? How did you make it up in Colorado? You had these little towns surrounded by farms with windmills on them, and you got along just fine. You got along just fine without the government, without the bankers. Why can't we do it today? We've got these small towns all around the country. If we go into these towns and start talking to the people, and that's, I think that's the real mistake we make. That's why I do this radio show, so we can talk to people. People are afraid,
you know,
to know their neighbor. They're afraid to talk to them. Go ahead.
Well, that's no. Well, you don't see kids playing in the yard. You don't just see dogs running around. They're all inside playing on their computers with the blinds pulled, you know. People don't communicate much individually in person. The social media and the available these networks for people to talk to one another that in a non-life situation, I think they're taking away the people's ability to communicate with one another in person.
The computers do that. The computers isolate people. They don't get out. When I started all this, got in all this, we had the Wake Up America movement. We all went to a auditorium and sat there during the night and had speakers come in like Charlie Key, like Charles Duke, who was a Colorado senator. And we got to talk to each other.
You know, one of the things is the Bar Association is about 1.2 million members. You know, all of the bars, all of the attorneys in the country, the best I've been able to determine, is about 1.2 million people. Well, that 1.2 million people is controlling the other 320 million. Now, we have more people living here than that, but the best I've been able to determine, there's about 320 million citizens, Americans, bona fide residents of this country. So basically, we got a 1.2 million member bait ball that, you know, there's enough people to do, to consume it and get rid of it, yet we're not banded together in a similar form and fashion to direct an attack at this group of people. Similarly, you know, I'm not involved in that debate yet, but what I'm trying to do is help people understand that if they come together, leave the federal government alone. Actually, leave your state government alone. Keep it at the municipal level in a county or a judicial district. Put a group of people together. Talk to, you know, get yourself talking. Let other people know that you're involved in this, that it's okay to be involved. In fact, I'm telling people in Colorado about my, I have a case number with the CBI where I can actually go to state law enforcement and make my complaint. Now, they're refusing to take it, but they know I have the right. Well, most people in my state don't have that. I'm asking them, get behind me. I'll put the target on my back or on my chest. I'll be the voice if just people will get behind me and help me. Show some support. You know, I've joined a one of these crowdfunding platforms. You know, I'm getting it ready to go where if I, you know, when people decide it's time, and basically what we got, it's kind of like an alligator. They grow to the size of their container. 100 years ago, our government alligator wasn't big enough to affect enough small people for anybody to pay attention. Today, that situation is different. Our alligator is extremely large. It's extremely hungry, and it's starting to make criminals out of citizens that didn't do anything wrong. You spoke a minute ago about, you know, a little bit of pot, 99 years.
Yep.
We'll go ahead and take seven and deal with you. They're looking for a 7-year bite out of your butt instead of putting you in court to defend yourself against a 99-year problem, escape with zero time. They've decided instead of consuming all of one individual, they're going to take bites of every individual. And eventually, we're going to get enough people that are being picked on. We're going to organize. We're going to go down to where, you know, in whatever state, whatever venue it is, and we're going to demand that these issues be debated, that they be brought in front of the public. Everybody I talk to would sure like to see common law. You know, it spoke about in our government documents.
Yes.
But we're under statutory and codified rules. Whether they're laws or not, I'm not here to debate that. It goes back to what I said earlier. I'm trying to find a way to organize the people to understand whatever the playbook is these bar members are using and to beat them. Once we get them out of the way, we can use the 13th, although it's right now it's not time to use the 13th. It's good to know it's there. It's good to know how to prove it's there. But really, all we have to do is prove insurance fraud, not a constitutional violation. We do that later. Understand the statutes. Understand that these people are not properly qualified. Then go get the posse. Go get enough of your local people to affect their arrest. Study an arraignment hearing. That's part of their process. An arraignment hearing is supposed to be administered by a qualified judge. Goes back to when that judge is assigned to hear the arraignment hearing for the district attorney that you have arrested by the, you know, your state law enforcement. When that judge isn't properly qualified, arrest him too. I guarantee you that will get the attention of the Bar Association.
Well,
we're going to look around.
Well, that's one of the big problems that I see as we do this. Who do you have in enforcement? You've got a few sheriffs out there that are trying to become constitutional. Richard Mack is working on that. And he
I'm going to tell you something, Clay. Clay, I'm going to address that right now. I personally called Richard Mack a fraud, and he never responded.
Okay.
I hope he's listening to this.
He hasn't talked to me in a while, so I, he's,
Let me explain something to you. Richard Mack was running around looking like the savior for the people. And, you know, he wasn't bonded. I called him out on it, and he ceased to communicate. See, that's a problem. My sheriff, now that, you know, he's part of this, he lost his bond. Remember my story back in 2011 and the certificates of participation?
Yeah. Yeah.
When he was bonded, he did what was right and got me with the CBI. The very next year, the county commissioners put him in this new program. He's not legally bonded. I can't go to him. He's at the same criminal level of this insurance fraud as the other people working in my county.
That brings up another notable figure here. What about Oath Keepers? Now, the gentleman that's in Oath Keepers, supposedly running Oath Keepers, would not come on my show, would not come up here and talk to anybody, ran into a few problems over there at the Bundy Ranch, and it just so happens that he's Jewish, and that's why he wouldn't talk to me. And really,
yeah.
You know, I've told people, I don't care who your grandmother slept with, I care what you're doing today. And the leadership of Oath Keepers is not doing what Oath Keepers should be doing. They're not going after the criminals among them, in my opinion.
It has to do with selective law enforcement. Selective enforcement of statutes. Selective enforcement of whatever you want to call this. If you got to treat all the people the same. See, the Constitution didn't say we're just going to deal with this group. But another group doesn't get to enjoy these same protections and privileges. You got to treat all the people the same. And if they catch me, they should be able to haul me to common law court and deal with me. But if I catch them speeding, I should have be able to do the same thing. This is where people like Richard Mack, my sheriff right now, his name is Rick Dunlop. Now, I've confronted him with it. I've actually sent him the documents to prove he's a fraud, and he ceased to communicate with me. Once the people understand what the true problem is, they will understand that they're going to have to come together in a large group. See, I actually, in the middle of May, drove to Denver, I had one person went with me as a witness. I confronted my state law enforcement division. They actually confirmed I was right. I actually went in unannounced, but the guy got in front of him and made a bigger problem before he realized who I was and what I was there for. But one of the things that people have to do is they have to find access to their law enforcement. They have to then put enough people together. If I could get a couple hundred people to meet me in that parking lot, take up all the employee parking, and shut that division down for a day or a week, you know, this Occupy movement, you know, and taking over city parks in New York, nothing like that. Nothing is heinous. We don't have to camp out. But we can all go somewhere at 5 o'clock, come back about 7 in the morning. We could shut that down, call the media. Eventually, it will make the news, and we could grow. It wouldn't take much. I don't have much. That's why I'm on your show. I'm talking to another, you know, group of people that I would love to travel to wherever a group could be put together. I'd have to have a little financial support. You know, I can't just take off at a whim.
It's what I need.
But, well, I've got the documents. I've got this 1868 original law book with the pedigree marks, and I got a receipt where I bought it. I know what's going on. I know how to prove it. I know how to help the people come together. But we've got to put our personal problems aside. We've got so many people that are they're financially constrained. They got mortgages, or they got kids in college, or they got whatever in the world is their problem that they use as this crutch. They're staying out of the fight. We got to get people to show up. I never wanted to be the leader of a group. That's not what I got into this for. It just so happens I may have the credentials to be the leader. I'm willing to get out in front. I'm willing to be seen. You just heard me call out Richard Mack, and I hope he's listening. Put me on a witness stand. Somebody put me on a witness stand, and I'll start working at this. You know, the one thing I haven't done is committed a crime, you know, where my opponents could actually deal with me, take me off the street. It's a very fine line I work at. But I'm willing to help people understand how to do this same thing, and not only understand how to do it, but feel good when they do it.
Well, you know, that's almost a problem that I haven't committed a crime in 40 years. I don't have to go to court. I don't have to deal with these people. I'm not committing a crime.
I've run into a little bit of that. That is kind of that's a funny thing. The only people that are really paying attention are the ones looking to get out of something. And it's almost a selfishness. But, and I'm not trying to throw cold water on anybody. I'm not trying to say anybody's doing anything wrong. But there is a way if enough people want to come together to actually fix this 1.2 million individual problem known as the Bar Association.
You've got a base to work on out of Colorado, because you've got a few million people there that are no longer criminals. And I'm putting them up as an example of something that would work, then we might be able to draw in people from other states. And, you know, keep in mind that hemp, again, I don't care whether you smoke it or not, hemp was the number one cash crop of America until it was taken away around the same time that Roosevelt made us all into debt slaves.
Yeah, that was about the time when the alligator started getting big enough that what was in the container wasn't able to satisfy its appetite. I've heard the stories of hemp. I have a family that was, before World War II, was back in Iowa, big farming operations. You know, the government was spraying the railroad right-of-ways with hemp seed. You know, and I remember as a kid when I'd go back to work on the farm, all of this was still growing wild in the, you know, along the railroad right-of-ways and getting in the farm fields. And I remember my uncle telling me about the history of it. One thing about hemp or weed or marijuana, whatever you want to say, is if it's going to be legal, just let the people do it. You can't have government intervention where it's regulated a little bit, where some people have to follow the rules and then other people don't. That's one of the problems in our state with this issue is, yes, it's supposed to be regulated. Yes, it's supposed to be legal, but it's still not everybody's playing by the same rules. This selectivity where some people have to do it and some people don't, that's become that's a new issue in our state. I don't care what the subject is, whether it's alcohol or weed or cocaine. If the people want it, let them have it, stay out of their business, and be done with it.
What I wrote about 45 years ago, that time I did in that Texas prison, I wrote a couple of novels. I thought it was well spent. And I wrote about the United States when they finally wised up and abolished all laws against victimless crimes, which is really the basis of a common law state. This is a common law country. If you haven't committed a crime, if you've got a plant in your pocket, that's not really a crime.
The thing about common law, and I'll just use you and I as an example, we're neighbors, and I think you messed me over. Common law allows me to bring you to court. As a moderator, we're going to put 12 other community members up there. I'm going to make my complaint. You're going to provide your defense, and part of the community, those 12 people over there, they get to make the decision whether my claim is right or your defense was just. And then it's over with.
It doesn't become an industry. These lawyers
have
an industry.
What we have today is the attorneys causing the problem, bringing somebody into court that shouldn't be there, and then they're at the defense. You see, one of the things about our current court system is both the attorneys are bar members. They're getting their own paycheck. They don't give a shit. Pardon my friend. They don't care who wins or loses because they both get paid. That's all they're in it for is the money.
That's right. And that defense attorney that you got, he ain't working for you. He's working for the court, isn't he?
Exactly. And the court says they're supposed to be bonded, and they're not. The whole thing is a fiction. It's just that nobody's paying attention to it. Now, the only reason I got involved, it goes back to this property taking that I suffered in 2002. What it was isn't important to your listeners. What its value was is of no concern. But when I tried, basically, you know, through my education, I thought I had access to the court system. When I tried somebody else to court, it was the bar members refused. And this is the thing I want to bring up to your readers. People are not paying attention. I invite everybody listening to this, if you're a resident of the United States, look up your local state attorney general. Go to their website and look in their mission statement. You will find, in about 20 states, you will find a state where part of their duty and charge is to defend state government employees against criminal prosecution. You think about that, the best offense or the best defense is no offense. What's happening is we have non-bar members. They don't even have to be elected. They could be appointed government employees breaking the laws and then relying on the attorney general's office to not prosecute them for those violations. This is the alligator just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the reason I brought this up, back in the day of my taking, I was trying to figure out what was going on and who did it and how. I was actually introduced to the federal lobbyist who drafted the contract between the local people who took my property and the state employees that were covering it up, preventing me from getting to court. It was the divvy document on who got how much of the value of this taking. That man personally admitted to me, he said, you can't go after me because I only drafted the document. I didn't sign it. Now, for me to get a copy of it, I saw it. But for me to get a copy of it, he said, you're going to have to subpoena me. I can't find anybody with the state that will provide that. I couldn't get him to court. There's the roadblock. It always came back to the attorneys. If the people listening to this will just do a small 10-minute search on the mission statement of their attorney general, you'll read about what the true problem is. They are protecting the criminal government employees from facing criminal prosecution. You ever got one of them successfully prosecuted, you could take them to court civilly. In fact, that criminal prosecution could open up an investigation of fraud, this insurance fraud, into the civil court system of your state. People don't know that. They haven't taken it to the next level.
You mean we might be able to find a honest judge? Such as
you won't find an honest judge. There isn't an honest judge today that I've been able to identify. They'll all say they are. I'll be proven a fraud.
Well, you know, I might have done a good story on this yesterday. I did a story about Leo Frank. Do you know who Leo Frank is?
Not enough.
He raped, and he was the owner of a pencil factory in Georgia, and he raped and murdered a little girl, 15-year-old girl by the name of Mary Fagan. And they took him to court and proved him guilty. And he was sentenced to hang, and a local judge or a local official stepped in and was going to get him another trial, And they started an organization to defend him. It's called the ADL, still exists today, because Leo Frank happened to be Jewish. But mm-hmm. There were four Jews on the grand jury that indicted him. And when they were going to release him, and they had a crooked governor, I guess, step in, was going to pardon him or going to get him a new trial. And all of the city officials went down to the jail, took him out of the jail, and hung him.
You know, I've heard the story, but I don't have enough detail. I didn't remember all of that.
Well, it's in my yesterday's show. If you click on the name of my guest,
okay,
which was John DeNugent, before you, listed right before you, you got the whole story. He did an excellent job of it, and it's kind of what we need to do today in Georgia with these city officials that took your land that aren't going by the law. They don't care about the law. And they're putting money away. We don't know how much money they're putting away in these comprehensive annual financial reports. We know that the...
Well, actually...
You do.
What I was going to tell you is what I've determined, that the state CAFR that I've got a copy of only represents maybe 20% of the actual amount of money that the state's dealing with. That's what really sucks, is what they're presenting to the people isn't actually the true story. It has nothing to do with the total amount of business that our government is involved in. One of the things I was sitting here listening to you, and I was playing around on this computer a little bit, I was trying to find this tab, but you brought up this thing, this general thing about the true amount of government corruption and knowing what they're really up to. What I wanted to do is visit with you, Chicken.
Okay.
The whole state of Colorado government is technically really not in business. You know what we were talking about, insurance fraud? The reason that these people are committing it, and the reason that they're supposed to have these bonds, is to deflect personal liability from the attorney. Did that make sense with that? You know, that's the reason that you know, first of all, a corporation, basically that protects the individual from exposing all of their assets to liability. You know, you can take 10% of your net worth and pledge it to this corporation, and that's all your liability exposure is. Well, all of this comes back to the attorney's desire to go to work, collect all of this money, yet not expose their personal assets to liability, and like in the event of a failed prosecution. Remember, we were talking about the prosecutor and the defense are both working for the state. You know, it's where they're getting their money.
Right.
They don't care if the defendant is successful or not, because they both get paid.
Right.
I'm going to use the case in point. I brought it up just a little bit ago. This James Holmes. He was that guy here about 3 years ago that shot all of those folks. He killed 12 and injured, I think, 70 in a movie theater late one night.
Yes.
Well, one of the things people can do is if they search the Colorado documents, they will find out how this man was actually brought to trial. And when the indicting document stated it was the people of the state of Colorado versus James Holmes. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. You'll see this in a lot of other states, and again, nobody's paying attention. And I was going to screen share this with you real quick, but I can't find the page in the computer. I can find stuff on James Holmes. But anyway, if you go back into the state judiciary archives, you will find that this man was prosecuted by the people of the state of Colorado, a corporation, all capital letters. Does that make sense?
Yep.
They didn't name the prosecutor. It wasn't Joe Blow versus James Holmes. It was the people of the state of Colorado. Let me, I want to show you something here on the screen.
Here's really the state of Colorado. It's a corporation the same way the United States is a corporation.
There you go. Well, one of the things I found here a while back, and I got to get to this screen sharing just so you and I can do this. I wish all of the people listening to this could actually see it. I just brought up, you see this document, State of Colorado? this is a certified response from the Colorado Secretary of State. Now this one's dated 2004, but in this Donetta Davidson, she was the Secretary of State on that date. We're on our third different Secretary of State since she left office. Now, I've got documents from the previous two, but the current one refused to give it to me, violated state statute and the open records request thing. But what this document says is a research. This office, no records exist in this office of a corporation, limited partnership, limited liability partnership, all the different kinds of corporations recognized in this state. No records exist, foreign or domestic, under the name the people of the state of Colorado. Our state just convicted and sentenced to life. Now, he's a known murderer. He actually kind of admitted it. He just didn't want to be executed, you know, this insanity thing.
All right.
But our state just convicted a man with an illegal corporation, as stated by the Secretary of State. This corporation has never existed in the history of this state back to 1876, foreignly or domestically. And there's the document to prove it right there. That will expose the true criminality of the entire Bar Association of this state. These people are hiding behind a corporation that does not nor has ever existed. This is what's bringing our people to trial. Can you imagine and this is where you get into a real fine line. People could be committing crimes, but our statutory system isn't even set up correctly to deal with them. Now, you know, once we get beyond statutory law, if we ever went to common law, none of this would matter, and we could convict these people.
Yeah,
this James Holmes...
Yeah, there it goes again in the back of my, right behind my head. I can hear that judge saying, don't bring that Constitution into my courtroom.
They don't want it. Well, first of all, it would prove their treason, too.
Right.
But you see, this is the people's problem. They don't want to play by the rule book that the people believe is true, correct, and in play. I mean, the judge is a fraud and a criminal. The attorneys, both prosecution and the defense attorneys, if it's a public defender, are criminals. A defendant could actually have a lawyer that's not a bar member, so that guy would be out. But the prosecution has to be a bar member as per our state statutes. They're a criminal. Then they're bringing individuals. Now, in this James Holmes, he actually did do these crimes. He never even left the theater. When the police got there, they arrested him on site. I mean, it was all proven. There was enough people with video recorders on their cell phones. They got the guy. But, Lee, if he wanted to follow the letter of the law, he was prosecuted and convicted by a corporation that does not nor has ever existed, and I have that confirmed on a certified statement by this Colorado Secretary of State. Now, what in the world are the people waiting on? If we want things to change, it's up to us to change it. So it's fun to listen to. And yes, you know, this justice system, just them, that's all fun to listen to, but it's time for the people to start doing something about it, or we're going to have to use to what we're complaining about.
Well, I just had the introduction on my Facebook and my page, blog talk page, with you here, that this communism, I mean, we went to war about 50 years ago, supposedly, and who won? Who won? You know, I said the New World Order I've warned you about for 20 years rapidly approaching. This is nothing less than the same communist system that has killed more than 1 billion people in Russia, China, and dozens of other countries around the world. That's why I in addition to my guests, I put on shows with a history you can't get off your TV.
You're right. And that's why I enjoy coming on to your show and a few other people's show. I tell people this all over the country, and I'm still free. You know, our system is working up to some point. I'm still able to do it. You know, I brought up the earlier, you know, an hour and a half ago, leading up to the Civil War. Why did it really happen? Well, I think it happened to get that amendment. You know, they had to split the people, so they used the color of skin issue.
Right.
They split North and South. They took the power away from Congress. Actually, if you go back in our history and read about the first executive order ever issued in this country, it was issued on April 15th of 1861 by President Abraham Lincoln.
A lawyer, by the way.
A bar member. See, that's one thing. You got to watch out, Clay. Lawyers are people that are trained in law. Attorneys are lawyers that joined the Bar Association. You can't pick at the lawyers. You got to pick at the attorneys. Lincoln was an attorney. He was an Illinois bar member. Now, one of the things, and I got distracted there just a second. What were we talking about? Remind me.
Well, got all sudden. I brought up the whole communist system. This is facing now.
I was going back to Lincoln.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about the billion people, you know, and you mentioned a few countries.
Yep.
I'm not so sure that that's not something, there's not some truth to what you said going all the way back to our Civil War where we had Americans fighting Americans.
I think that, I also mentioned the Cold War. The Russian people have never been our enemy. The Russian Tsar was our friend, helped us in that Civil War. Told the North, you know, to stay out of the South or he'd bring his ships in. And he was murdered, too. He was murdered. And I've told people this is another false flag. The Russians are coming. Bullshit. The Russians don't have anything. At least the people aren't our enemy. The Bolshevik government that took over Russia, the Bolshevik government we've got here is represented by the Rothschilds and these attorneys that work for the Rothschilds out of the city of London. They're our enemy, and they're the enemy of everybody around the world. And people are starting to wake up to it. They're starting to unite. Argentina, Spain, Portugal. There's a few other countries out there. I think Portugal just legalized all drugs. So because it's, guess what? It's foreign countries there that are bringing these drugs in and making money off of Americans. Why don't you just legalize them? Trump's got a pretty good plan that I'll probably bring up in a later plan for the illegal aliens. But he wants to put up a wall. I think we ought to put up tables. Let them bring up all the cocaine, let them bring up all the marijuana, let them bring up all the heroin. They won't lay it on the table, pay a duty on it, abolish the laws against victimless crimes, and close down the prison systems. Close them down. If you want to kill yourself with cocaine, go over that corner and do it, will you?
Well, that's the thing. Our country's set up where, you know, people can get together, you know, band into light groups and do what you want to do. That was kind of the way it was all supposed to be.
Well, that was in the 60s. I don't know if you remember that. We used to sit around that campfire smoking a joint, and we didn't go to war with nobody.
Well,
we didn't kill nobody.
And you know what? That's where I think this conversation is what it's been all about, is educate the people to take care of the corruption and then debate what we want to do. If we want to change statutes, fine. If we want to get together and sit around the campfire there and we're not hurting anybody, okay. But we're tired of government employees bringing us in front of the man, charging us with things that we didn't do, taking away our ability to properly defend ourselves against the criminal charges to get a just decision.
You know,
we have no justice.
We got a few million people out there that I think I represent, and that's ex-cons. You know, there ain't no reason I can't own a gun that I shouldn't own a gun. There's no reason I shouldn't vote. I paid my debt to society. I didn't break a law. It was an unjust law, and I got that law changed. And I also helped stop a war.
We're running out of time. I want to mention something to you.
You got
to- I was taught in school that you had civil rights. Whatever these rights were, you had them. That if you did something wrong and convicted of that, you lost those civil rights for the term of your incarceration while you were paying your debt to society.
Yes.
Then once you got out, whether you got all of those back or not, but see, your civil rights were removed from you. You were incarcerated. You paid your penalty. And then when you got out, you could work to get these back. I don't know. You know, I don't remember how the teachers actually said it, but you became a member of society after you paid your debt, similar to what you just spoke about.
Yes.
Apparently none of that exists. It's kind of like once they brand you, you're branded for life. And that's not right either. You spoke about immigration and setting up tables. Well, what do we have? Why have we built bridges and put up immigration stations with the documents for people to fill out to come in and enjoy this country and our society? Why do we even have those if we're not going to have everybody coming through the gate or across the bridge? If we're not going to have everybody do it, why do we ask anybody to do it? Does that make sense?
Yep.
There you go. These are subjects that already should be able to debate, but we're not, because we have people in control of our government that are dictating what the people hear and who's talking about it. Everybody should be involved in this debate, not just a few selected criminal individuals that are employed by our domestic governments.
You're absolutely right about that. And this has happened. I've asked this question of a number of my guests. Can you give me a point in time of history when it's been easy to be free?
Well, I've never heard that it was actually ever easy.
Never has been. And I've been involved with the presidential kick in 1996. Had people, matter of fact, one of the gentlemen was from Colorado. His name was Eugene Schroeder. He sat in with us at some of these presidential meetings when we were deciding what direction, what platform Charles Collins was going to use. And I think that's what's happening now, today. And what's happening tomorrow with Carl coming on my show? Mm-hmm. We are setting up to run this country right in the future. You know, I mean, most people thought, well, I'm just one person. What can I do? Well, one person has been the source of change across this country, across the world, forever. It's been one man that started an idea, whether his name was Gandhi or whether it was Thomas Jefferson. We've had these people that stood up and spoke out like you, told the truth, and have all benefited from that.
We're all members of a common society. Why don't we all take our position? It's time for the people to quit hiding behind the efforts of others. This country's enjoyed times of plenty where there wasn't a lot of strife and people didn't have a lot of problems. Right now we're in a change. We're going through a recession. We're dealing with public corruption. We're dealing with the UN issue. it's been around forever, but it's now becoming a problem, and the people are recognizing it. This one world order, this who's actually going to be in control of the population of the earth? Is it going to be a very, very few? Is it going to be a very, very few of a few hundred countries? Where are we at? Well, the people, it's time for the people to get up, voice their opinion, and if there's not enough of us that want to make the change and go back to the way it was, then the rest of us need to shut up. If there are enough people in this country that want America to be American and separate from all these other countries, it's also time for us to enter into that debate and do something about it. You know, we're about out of time. I didn't know if anybody had any questions. I'm in process of getting in.
Nobody called in, and it's very rare that they do. I got to tell you that.
Okay. Well, one of the things, you know, and I mentioned this before, and I'm not really promoting this just yet, but I'm in the process of getting involved with one of these crowdfunding firms.
Right.
Where the people that either they don't want to be out in the forefront or they have limited resources, but they want to be a part of a project. I want to mention this to you, Clay, and Carl might mention this tomorrow. There's got to be some mechanism set up where the people can support a common cause. And I'm going to invite you to think about that. You and I can talk another day just between the two of us, but the people need to find a way to support the ones that are willing to be in the front. Not necessarily me, but I might have to be one of them that is willing to, you know, not only research and find the documents, but bring them to the people, put them out there. I'm not sure what the proper funding mechanism is, but we're going to have to find one where we can come together as a group, you know, where 20,000 people can support 10 that are actually out there, you know, willing to travel and go to these venues and expose this corruption. I think that's going to, you know, I wanted to bring that up toward the end of your call.
I think that's necessary. I think that's one of the things I'm working for. That's why I do this radio show for 2 hours every morning.
Well, you know, one of these days you and I might have to talk about that a little more. You know, you think about it, I think about it. We might have a good idea from one of, you know, if one of your listeners emails or, you know, contacts you, has an idea. The people need to find a way to actually support something, some group or movement. Don't know how, what to call it. Carl may be able to help us with that too, you know, on his call tomorrow.
Well, that's when I had a hard copy magazine that was out there, I got donations. With just the internet, everybody wants the internet to be free. They don't want to spend anything. They don't want to donate, and it's wrong. It's wrong. I spend a lot of money to maintain the websites, to do this show, and we can certainly use help in doing it.
This year, I was talking to a lot of people, and there's actually, going back to the original 13th Amendment to start over, there's actually a lot of documents that we know where they're at, but we need to get certified copies of them. And I actually can't fund a 4 or 5 month trip, you know, just the gas and the wear and tear on the truck and the motel and restaurant bills is going to be something that I need help with. Then you got to pay for the certified documents, and you got to do this and you got to do that. Well, I put together a project through GoFundMe. Now I talked to hundreds of people for the first 4 or 5 months of this year. I actually set up this page, got with this website, let the word out, and in 60 days, I had 5 people contributed a total of less than $200 to it. Everybody was on the bandwagon. Well, if you know, you need to get something going. Well, I found out that didn't work. So I'm, you know, that's the reason I brought it up to you, and Carl knows about it. Some other people around Colorado know about it. We need to discuss this with the people. What would they be willing to contribute to?
Well, you know, I have done preparedness expos. I've traveled the whole country. Right now, I got a 37-foot fifth wheel, but no truck to pull it. Can't pull the Harley. Can't pull over the Harley, and the truck blew up a few months ago. Certainly don't have the money to go out and buy a new truck. But I did these preparedness expos, and I started the Free American, and I got national distribution with it. I did really well until I made that tactical error of referring to 9/11 as an exaggerated case of Jewish lightning, and then they tried to kill me and spent 4 months in a hospital. Hard to do a radio show when you're drugged into oblivion.
Yeah.
But, you know, how we were really affecting people. We were making a change. I mean, they were afraid of the Free American because I was reaching out. I had 5,000 subscribers. Well, maybe not, maybe 3,000. I had 3,000 subscribers to a hard copy magazine. I can do that again. Then I was called, you know, they tried to demonize me for being too controversial, for being anti-government. But everything I talked about over the last 20 years is true and happening now. Now more people are starting to wake up.
I think you're right, and maybe, you know, I don't know how to, you know, identifying the enemy. One of the things I've decided to do, I'm not going to pick on a group. I'm going to pick on individuals. You and I spoke about this last week, well, before we scheduled this show. You know, I'm individually naming Dan Hodson Peller, the 7th Judicial District Attorney of the 7th Judicial District of Colorado.
Right.
I'm not picking Jews or whites or Hispanics. I'm going to pick at an individual. I'm going to identify a target, and I'm going to square off with that individual. Now, if his group comes after me, the people need to know about that. I don't know how big the bar is. I don't think there's a bar member that's willing to take me on. Now, they may hire a hitman, you know, some heinous bastard that I don't know about, you know, to stalk me and find me and take me out. I'm willing to take that chance.
Keep in mind that I have been a presidential candidate's bodyguard. So,
well, you know, however all we can use all of these assets in the future is yet to be determined. But, you know, you're willing to get in the fight and play your role. I'm willing to play my role. My role may be better as an organizer and a reader of documents and understanding how they go together. I don't know what my role is, but I'm willing to be a part of this.
You know, if you do the research, Carl does the research, I'll tell you what, Carl and I could both go to any meeting, any agenda, whether it's the Elks Club or what, and speak there. I've spoken before hundreds of people at the preparedness expos, when I'm in the magazine, when I was talking about the New World Order, when I was talking about Waco, when I was talking about Oklahoma City. All of these things were real. All of these things, people were murdered, people were killed. And I'm not afraid to tell them the truth.
I'm not either. I'd like to just, you know, I want to expose the people responsible for whatever it is we're talking about. You know, you talked about your magazine and your subscription numbers, you know, in public speaking. You can do it. I believe I could do it with a little polish. Carl can do it. We need to find the people that can help us get to these venues. I can't do it on my own anymore. I spent enough money proving that I couldn't get to court. Now I don't have any money left over to go tell the people about my experience, other than through these, you know, these types of calls. But we put together a plan. Find out what do the people want to support? How do they want to provide that support? Do they want to be seen as part of the crowd, or do they want to be part of the financial backing? We need to find a way to understand what the people are looking for and how they want to support it, and I'll be a part of this.
That's what we need. We need the, you're absolutely right. We need the financial support, and you know, there's all kinds of ways that you can set that up as far as financial. I don't know what we've got here. I got a magazine, still exists. I've got, all I need is the backing to print it. If you want a printed copy, you need to do that. You know, I need to have the money to print it. I just stopped supporting the paper, the people that are cutting down the trees, and I quit supporting the Rothschild banking issue, and I quit supporting the Rockefeller, naming names here, I quit supporting Rockefeller and buying his gasoline to travel across the country. But that could change. And I will talk to you later out of the air about ways we can do this.
That would be good, because one of the things I'm looking for is a group of people that are willing to do the most for the least, you know, take care of all of our problems. I'm not interested in supporting individual claims against the government. We can do that later once all of the people have access to whatever we think is justice. Then it'll be everybody's charge to take care of their individual crimes once the system is corrected. So, you know, I've appreciated this. I actually enjoy being able to present some of the information I have on this 13th Amendment. I hope the people that will listen to this understand that it was real, understand that it actually happened, and understand that the documents do exist to prove it. Now, I don't think it's going to solve. I don't think we use the 13th to solve our current problem, but it can be used in conjunction with some of these other things. You know, you said you brought up insurance fraud. I spoke about it a little bit. People, we shouldn't suffer at the hands of these criminals that are running our government. Do we do anything about it tomorrow? Do we wait till next month? Or do we wait till after the election next year? These are the issues in these debates that we need to settle now. We need to start talking about now. So that when do we do whatever it is we're going to do? That's an important question.
If you're seeing on Facebook, if you're listening on freeamerican.com, if you're listening on Blog Talk, share this show. This is an important show. You need to understand, we do have answers. It's one of the things that I really try to, I mean, I can bring you up history. I can tell you about the Bolshevik Revolution. I can tell you about Leo Frank getting hung. But the important thing, this show is more important because this is an answer. This is a positive direction that we can take in that's legal. Ain't going to put you, they're not going to put you in jail for this. We are right here. And, Jim, I'd like to have you back on. Jim Porter's been my guest today.
Anytime.
All right, sir. We're out of time. And you're welcome to call in to with Carl tomorrow.
And it'll be at the same time tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir.
I'll talk to Carl later today, and we'll see how that'll all work out.
All right, sir. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks, Mike.
FreeAmerican.com. Make a donation. There's a donate button there.